Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar here with Bobby Kennedy and Mike Papantonio. Today on Ring of Fire, actor and activist Mark Ruffalo will be here to talk about his anti-fracking work, as well as his involvement with Occupy Wall Street. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse will be joining us to discuss his recent floor speech on climate change and why his colleagues in the Senate have become afraid to even bring up the subject. Author Ari Berman will join us to talk about how the austerity class has managed to push their supply-side economics lies in Washington and why the Obama administration is buying into those lies. We encourage all of our listeners to follow Ring of Fire on Facebook and Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. You can also email us your thoughts on this week's show to info@ringoffireradio.com. And you can help support progressive media by subscribing to our podcast. Just go to our blog at ringoffireradio.com to sign up now. So, Pap, this week we didn't see any Republican debates, but the Republican contenders for president are still out there, and they seem to get crazier every day.
You know, Rocky Horror Picture Show, this comes to my mind. Yeah, when the Rocky Horror Picture Show was at its height of popularity, they had devoted followers. They'd dress up like Dr. Frankenfurter. They'd memorize every word Rocky Horror ever spoke because it was fun to watch. It was the kind of show you didn't have to be completely sober to watch it, and you still understood what was happening. You always wanted to see the certifiable, crazy, oddball character sing and, you know, dance and blurt out almost incomprehensible, stupid quotes. You know, but none of that cast in that bizarre comedy, none of them were running for president. That's what's scary here, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. And frankly, sadly, they have a chance to win. But less and less so from the genuine crazies. You've got Rick Perry has sort of notched it up a little bit. You know, when they start to fade, like Rick Perry is, he came in with all the new hype. And when they start to fade is when they really go full on nuts. And Rick Perry is now essentially come out as a birther.
Yeah. Yeah, the reason we're seeing these different flavors of the same Republican tea bagger, oddball candidate, just different flavors, same person, is because they're out to try to win those fringe votes in the primaries. The GOP, I mean all the GOP candidates, they're all beginning to look like the cast characters in that Rocky Horror Picture Show because not by mistake. Their handlers have told them that to focus on what works. And they focused on what works to gather up votes in the primaries. Now, it's almost like they're ignoring the general election, but they're focused on votes in the primaries, and they've concluded that there's no traditional, I mean, this is the only thing you can look at it, that there is no traditional Republican Party anymore. I mean, the Tea Party transition is complete. The Frankenstein monster is built, and it's supposed to look more like a political farce than a serious Goldwater kind of conservative or a Reagan kind of conservative. I mean, look, Sam, even Pat Robertson, I mean, that freak, this TV evangelist from the 700 Club, well, he's come out and he said what we all know, and that is he's so creeped out by these candidates, this freak show that's unfolding, that he's saying that we know you can't win a general election like that. You can win the primaries, but what happens when you go get clobbered in the general election? And I mean, that's what's happening here. I mean, you saw
I don't think we can emphasize this enough. Pat Robertson was the guy who agreed with Jerry Falwell that 9/11 happened because there were too many gay people and partiers in New York City. And he is telling the Republican Party that they have moved too far to the right. And that's because you got a guy like Rick Perry coming out and he is getting his talking points from Donald Trump. And it's not, you know, look, the one thing that Donald Trump hit on that I think was successful, that was resonating, was his anti-free trade comments. But Rick Perry got out of the meeting with Donald Trump and started talking about Barack Obama's, President Obama's birth certificate being fake.
I mean, the one thin connection that the party has with any kind of sanity at all is that they abandoned that at one point, and then all of a sudden it's back. I mean, even Sarah Palin understood that this kind of simpleton, witless, crack-brained image that's attaching to the GOP field is a whole, it is great potential to interrupt her cash flow as this D-list celebrity. And I mean, when you see the foolish, lightweight cast of characters all together on a stage, I mean, you understand why Chris Christie has enough sense to avoid having that stench of stupid coming from the stage that affect his political career. I mean, there's an inertia that attaches to a political image. Shallowness, witless, cuckoo. It's those aren't good combinations for a serious political candidate like Chris Christie. That's why he's not up there. So, I mean, every day, serious GOP politicians, if there are any left, have got to be rejoicing that they're not up there on that stage with Michelle Bachmann, who told us that Obama was running death camps where he tortured conservative teabaggers, or Herman Cain, who thinks it's a good idea to electrocute women and children, migrant workers who, you know, crossed the border, or Rick Perry, who wanted to secede from the union, wanted to abandon the 16th and 17th Amendment. And now we have the whole birther thing coming up again. I mean, who really believes that Obama is some kind of Manchurian candidate set out to destroy America? But that's what this is all about.
Yep. And, sort of upping the crazy factor, Herman Cain came out with an ad this week that, for the life of me, I can't quite figure out what the point of this is.
It's an old crazy-looking guy, close-up of a crazy-looking guy smoking a cigarette.
Well, that's the thing. It's this guy, Mark Block.
Right.
He is the chief of staff and the chief operating officer for the Cain campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And
smoking a cigarette.
He is talking. Well, he's not. You don't see it at the beginning. Mm-hmm. He's talking into camera. He's saying, he's essentially saying that I endorse Herman Cain. Now, of course, you're the guy who's in charge of the campaign. Of course you endorse Herman Cain. He sits there and he talks about Herman Cain's going to unify America, which is just a bizarre comment, seeing as how this guy has come out and said that being gay is a lifestyle choice, that they can just choose not to be gay. He's a guy who's come out and said that he's going to have a religious test for who sits in his cabinet and that we're all under the thumb of Sharia law. He's a guy who has called Social Security the equivalent of slavery. And so this is not a guy who's going to bring together people. But if that wasn't bizarre enough, at the end of his campaign manager endorsing, I guess, the campaign, he pulls out a cigarette and starts puffing on a cigarette for a couple minutes into the camera.
Well, you know, there's a reason for that. The reason is this isn't mistake. It's like when I try a case, I focus. I know every aspect of the nuances to how to present the case. That's what they've done here. Here's what they focused on, Sam. They have figured out that's who they're going after, is the old crazy uncle that, you know, that scares small children and animals. I mean, you know, that's the guy that shows up at Thanksgiving dinner every year and scares the hell out of everybody. That's who they're going after, because that's what the teabag party is. They're a bunch of crazy old uncles. And so that didn't just happen. That's the image they want to project. That's who they want.
I guess the idea is that they're thinking, like, this shows that we're taking back freedom.
Right.
I guess
exactly.
The ability to shoot a YouTube and smoke on a YouTube is somehow going to spread liberty to everybody. It's just bizarre.
Well, this didn't just happen without it being focused. And they figured out those are the people they're going after. So, hey, Sam, let's take a break. Let's pick up some of this when we come back.
Okay. Welcome back to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar here with Bobby Kennedy and Mike Papantonio. Remember, if you want to help support Ring of Fire, you can sponsor an hour of our show. You can sign up online at ringoffireradio.com. And now let's get back to this week's buried stories. So, Pap, we were talking about how Herman Cain and Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann, and I guess Michelle Bachmann, we mentioned this week that she lost most of her campaign staff. I guess it's not, of course, because she's crazy, because she was no less crazy at the beginning of this campaign. It was just that her campaign staff said, we can go work for somebody who's crazy and has a chance of winning. And so they may have they move over to Rick Perry's campaign, to Herman Cain's campaign. But on the other side of the ledger, the less obviously crazy, but who is just as captured by these Tea Party crazies, of course, is Mitt Romney. And he appointed as his legal advisor Robert Bork. Now, Robert Bork is one of the most radically right judges that it was ever around. This is a guy who...
Well, he's the heart of the Federalist Party.
And he's a guy who says that the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment shouldn't apply to women, because he feels that women are not discriminated against anymore because they're no longer in the minority, or they're not a minority. But of course, he completely ignores the fact that for every hour a woman works, they make 77 cents on the dollar as to their male counterpart.
Well, the important thing about Bork, I mean, if you remember the Bork hearings, by the time they were over, and you know, they didn't come out and say it, but even the politicians who put Bork up were embarrassed by him. They were once they started digging in and finding out what an oddball he really was, they were embarrassed by him. And so it's an interesting choice. Hey, how about the Marco Rubio case? Remember, you and I said months ago, we said, you got some splanto do, Marco Rubio. And so now the explanations are freakish. Not only, you know, he tries to stand on this idea that his parents were some kind of great patriots who left Cuba and then came to the United States. Well, they don't tell the rest of the story.
That's right.
He went back to Cuba. They went back to Cuba because of their relationship with Castro.
Well, the biggest issue for Rubio is that, you know, the Republican Party was looking at him to be the Hispanic face of the party as a way of doing better with Hispanic voters across the country, because his story, of course, was that his family escaped the Castro revolution in Cuba in 1959. And it turns out only problem with that story is that his parents didn't leave when Castro, when the revolution in Cuba happened. They left 3 years earlier while Castro was still in Mexico.
Right.
This is this does two things. One, it shows that Marco Rubio is a liar, and that he was willing to pretend that his parents were some type of exiles, political exiles from Cuba. But it also shows that he's trying to hide the fact that his family came over here for the same reason that all immigrants come to America. Not because they're running from political oppression, because they wanted a better life.
Right. What's important about it, too, is that you don't simply make trips back and forth to Castro's Cuba unless you know that you have some involvement with Castro. In other words, you don't just, you know, you don't willy-nilly go back and forth. Look, when Cuban exiles come to America, they're saying, we're coming here, and if we go back, we'll be killed. That's right. What they're saying. We'll be put in prison or we'll be killed. His parents went back and forth during a time when they were trying to petition the United States to become citizens, because they said, well, we fear for our life. Well, they obviously don't fear for their lives. They obviously were somehow involved with that movement, that Castro's movement, his victory in 1959, because, you know, his father and mother spent time there with Castro in Cuba, and then they left when they wanted and went back when they wanted. So, you know, this is such a pitiful lie. And the worst thing about the lie is that you did have people who gave their lives to fight Castro, and then they came over to the United States. They were true, you know, they felt themselves Cuban patriots. And so they actually gave up their life to do that. And here you have these frauds. You have Marco Rubio fraud, and now his mother and father fraud, that he's tried to use as a campaign edge. It's a pitiful story.
I mean, and I think, frankly, it's probably, I mean, although, you know, if Mitt Romney is the nominee, the idea of having a second flip-flopper on the ticket may take some of the heat off of Romney. But I have a feeling it's going to keep him off the ticket, because I think the detrimental, look, you know, in Florida, as you know, down in South Florida, there's a lot of intense hatred towards Castro.
The only way that's the only reason Rubio won. He captured the crazy teabaggers and he got the Cuban vote down there. They're not going to like this story. Some of their mothers and fathers died fighting Castro. And now you find out, well, these people are just part of the stench.
And I think it's actually going to even be worse for immigrants coming from Latin America, because, you know, why should Marco Rubio, I mean, if Marco is actually his name, we could find out next week that it's not even his name. But why should Marco Rubio ditch, essentially, you know, pull up the ladder? My family came here as immigrants, but we're going to pretend like we didn't come here for economic reasons, and so that I can go out there and I can slam any immigrant that does. And, you know, this is consistent with the Republican Party mentality. I mean, you have that that Florida Republican representative, that guy, Alan Hayes, who has a real problem with Florida's two new congressional seats that will create majority Hispanic districts in Central Florida, mm-hmm. where, you know, there's a big Puerto Rican population there, as mm-hmm. you know.
And they don't, the Cubans and Puerto Ricans don't get along all that
well. But you've got Hayes going around saying, like, well, if these guys speak Spanish, we need to make sure that they're American citizens.
Right.
As if he doesn't realize that Puerto Ricans are American citizens from birth. Puerto Rico is part of the United States of America.
Well, you know, there's every day in Florida, people used to think of Florida as a progressive state. And then you had, you know, the teabaggers that put Rick Scott in office. And, you know, it's anything but progressive. It's turned into a damn political hellhole in every regard. It's an there's not a day that goes by to where an editorial writer doesn't come out. I mean, great editorial writers saying, you know, Florida legislature, you've embarrassed us again. I mean, it's just
and it's happening again. You got a federal court that decided to look at Rick Scott's mm-hmm. plan to test welfare recipients for drugs, which turned out to show that these welfare recipients had a lower rate of drug use than average Floridians.
What they really need to be doing with Rick Scott is going back and looking at his, you know, at the time that his company stole $1.4 billion from taxpayers in Medicare scams.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, but Pap, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with more news when we return.
I'm Mike Papantonio, and you've been listening to a free sample of Ring of Fire Radio. If you'd like to listen to the full show, subscribe to our weekly podcast at our website at ringoffireradio.com. It's your support that helps keep us on the air.